You are tuned to KDWA AM 1460 FM 97.7, and this is Community In Depth. I'm your host for this segment, Mike Rood, and I have in studio with me today from United Way of Hastings, Jane Newmiller-Boosted, who heads up the Helping Kids Succeed program with Hastings Schools and Communities in Schools. And it's good to have you back, Jane. How are you doing today?
Good, thank you. It's good to be here.
And United Way of Hastings is working in, you're working in your, working into your banner campaign coming up.
Yes.
The school year is starting.
Yes.
I say all that to say that I know United Way of Hastings has not been taking the month off since we last talked.
This has probably been one of the busiest weeks we have had in a long, long time. It's been crazy busy.
It's been crazy busy, but it's in a good way.
Yes.
You're getting a lot of things prepared for the school year. Mm-hmm. The Helping Kids Succeed is coming back. Kel O'Leary is going to be back in the high school.
Yes, we're excited about that.
Working with your students. Oh, man. I'm excited for the students this year.
Yes, good point.
I'm still very much impressed with the programs that United Way of Hastings has put together for our students, and I'm glad to be a part of telling that story. That's always fun to me.
Well, that's awesome. We always appreciate the support.
Well, and let's start then with some of the things that United Way of Hastings has been doing to support the students in the ISD 200.
Mm-hmm.
And you recently concluded your Stuff the Bus efforts.
We did.
Tell me about that.
If you were driving around town in front of Cub and Coburn's and Walmart, you may have noticed a yellow school bus with one of our big banners, signs on the side of it. We had a week-long Stuff the Bus campaign.
Yep.
And what we were doing was collecting food and funds for our Food for Kids program.
Right.
And that's our weekend meal pack program. We, several years ago, did some research and found out there were students in Hastings who were coming to school Monday mornings without having had proper nutrition over the weekend, haven't had, you know, enough to eat, they're hungry, they're some behavior issues. So we started a pilot program, and out of that, that was not only successful, we have continued that ever since. Our volunteer, Amy Schaefer, runs that mm-hmm. and does a fantastic job. And even last year during the pandemic, we were still giving away about 160 bags, food bags a weekend.
Taking out the COVID year, because that screwed up everything as far as data gathering goes.
Yeah.
And I know it doesn't really make a difference to the program in and of itself, but what percentage of families in Hastings fit into that category where they have kids that are going hungry over the weekend?
That's a good question. What we have found is that there are some families that use the food bags on a fairly regular, ongoing basis. Okay. But we also have a significant percentage that will use it for a short period of time. Say
right.
there's
okay.
been a job loss or, you know, something has happened in the family. And this just allows them to kind of get over that hump or get over that challenging situation. And then there is a new job or a new living situation, and then they don't need those weekend meal bags. And so it is a little hard to say, you know, an exact
okay,
number
sure.
percentage-wise. We always hope, you know, we want to be there for people that need us, and then when they don't, they're able to go on and provide those meals themselves.
Well, and that's why I preface that by saying it doesn't really fit into the parameters of the program. But some people kind of wonder, well, I know there's families mm-hmm. out there about how many might be like that.
Yeah.
Are there any restrictions on who can avail themselves of that program?
You know, it's one of the interesting things. We are not no one on our team actually knows who the food goes to. We work very closely with the schools themselves, with the mm-hmm. elementary and the middle school, and we get a number that is needed on a weekly or every 2 weeks sometimes basis, and then Amy and her volunteers will deliver those number of bags to the schools. And then the staff, sometimes it's the counseling staff, sometimes it's the support worker or the family support worker or social worker, is the one making the connections with the families and providing the meal bags back to those students. Each school does it a little differently.
Okay.
But it's important to us that it is as private as possible.
Right.
And as discreet as possible.
Right.
You know, they're plain Ziploc bags that the food does go into. And so anything that we can do to help the kids feel comfortable and, you know, that this is just, you know, what you need today, and hopefully tomorrow is a different situation.
Sure.
But we want to be as honoring of that as we can and keep that privacy and keep those families, you know, that's their situation. And
exactly.
And we're just there to support that.
Give it as much dignity as we possibly
yes.
can from our end.
Yep,
and
great word.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I'm a huge believer in preserving people's dignity.
Absolutely.
Yes. How much did you raise?
Ooh,
did
my
we
gosh.
Say?
Yeah.
I don't know if we said.
We did not. It was actually, interestingly, it was one of our most successful drives that we
nice.
Had. And again, we were in those multiple locations, which is always kind of good in terms of the raising possibilities. We did receive just over $2,000 in cash.
Nice.
Which again,
pizza
that
party.
Is the most we have raised. and we gathered and collected over 3,500 food items.
Okay.
And so part of it involved Amy in particular, as well as I think she had one or two volunteers that may have helped. But mostly Amy was working with the grocery stores, and we actually prepared food bags that had the right
yes.
items already in it. And so people could just go to the checkout, grab one of the food bags, pay $5, and then put it right in the bin. And those are the...
I've seen that program with, or I've seen that method with other programs
yes,
in the area.
Yes, it works
seems
very
to
well.
Very mm-hmm. well, yep.
And people should know, when we do that, we typically then get, you know, the freshest food possible. Mm-hmm. Amy goes through and actually checks every single item for expiration dates. And so no food ever goes to a student that has expired, or she's pretty picky. Even if it's close to us expiring, mm-hmm. She makes sure that bag is kind of in the front of the line.
Sure.
And so that it's given to the students right away. And so we don't want anything to go to waste.
Once again, that goes back to that little dignity part. I'm sure that mm-hmm. a lot of kids don't look at those, but it's nice that they can
absolutely.
Have it in the back of their mind that we're getting good stuff. We're
absolutely.
Not just, we're not getting someone's cast offs.
Heck no.
Yeah.
Absolutely
Heck
not.
No. Hey, now watch the language, FCC.
Gosh, okay.
Gosh. Pardon me.
Yeah, Amy's just amazing. She has got the whole thing just down to a science, and is very meticulous about every aspect of it.
And the other thing too about this program, this food program for kids on the weekend, is you're open to donations throughout the year for
yes.
that.
Mm-hmm.
The Stuff the Bus is a great start for the school year, but there is still going to be needs come January, February, and even beyond.
Definitely. We do collect funds and resources throughout the year for that. We often will have teams of people around the city. The 4-H'ers have helped us. Several of the churches have helped us either to do food drives or to do packing events. And so, it's the kind of thing that goes very quickly. So if you get a larger number of people, in a team, we have all the food arranged on the table and people walk around the table and put food in the bags, making sure the right items are in there. Very easy for groups to do.
Mm-hmm.
And it's clearly a way to give back, which is always very nice, especially when we work with young people, 4-H'ers and church youth groups. Those
oh,
are
yeah.
younger members of our community.
Sure.
And it's important for them to see what a nonprofit does and how, you can, as even as a student, you can give back to your community, give back to the people around you. And that's an important lesson for young people to learn.
And how much food will the program go through in a given weekend average?
We will do roughly 160 bags.
160 bags
a weekend.
With
and those will, each bag will contain two, I'm doing air quotes, two breakfast items, two lunch items, and two dinner items. And they are things that can be easily prepared in a microwave.
Right.
So we'll have canned spaghetti. We'll have sometimes yogurt packages,
mm-hmm.
The stable.
The fruit cups.
Fruit cups. Anything that's shelf stable.
Right.
That does not have to be refrigerated. And again, it's something that we look to do as nutritious a project as nutritious a pack as we can
mm-hmm.
within the constraints that we have.
Sure. So being 160 bags on a weekend, there's probably quite a bit of product that you would go through, say, in a month or.
Yeah, I'd have to double check with Amy. But, the 3,500 items that we just collected, those will last us, for a couple of months probably.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm going to estimate around Thanksgiving is probably when we'll start to, she'll, Amy will already be thinking ahead. but this current crop of items will last us for a little while, but yeah,
good.
We never know. So
sure.
if families continue to face tough situations, we may go through that a little more quickly.
Mm-hmm.
If the economy turns around, if COVID is having, moderates its impact somewhat, then potentially we could have somewhat less. But we have, ever since the program started, we have been over 100 a week easily, usually a fair amount over that. And so the need is there.
And I ask these questions just to help the listeners to understand that the need is ongoing.
Yes.
And it is not just a bag or two here or there. It's
right.
a steadily used program, yes. And it needs steady support.
Absolutely. Thanks, Mike. That is a great reminder. Mm-hmm. It is every week, and the bags have to be delivered every week, and they have to get to the students every week, and it requires a great deal of planning upstream to make sure that all of that happens. And so that is, it's very important that, you know, the support that we have received has been fantastic, and it's a generous community, and so we appreciate any time someone has put a package of granola bars into one of our bins or has written a check, as sometimes happens.
Sure.
We are very appreciative of that, because that literally every dollar goes to support those kids.
And working then to address the weekend nutrition needs of the students in the school district is important.
Mm-hmm.
But you also had an event recently, just in the past few days, that addresses a much more, and I'm sorry to say it this way, sinister aspect of teenage life now in Minnesota or even beyond.
Mm-hmm.
And on the 30th of August, there was a kickoff event for the International Overdose Awareness Month. We had the day on the 31st, but the whole month is for that.
Yes.
What we're talking about is a pandemic, well, an epidemic of its own.
Yes.
Where synthetic opioids are making their way into every community that is around, including Hastings.
Absolutely.
Even over in Prescott or anywhere. Mm-hmm. And there have been any number of young people that have unknowingly consumed these opioids, synthetic opioids, and it has cost them their lives.
Yes.
We've talked very briefly, but we have mentioned Bridget Noring, who is spearheading a drive here in Hastings.
Mm-hmm, that's correct.
And this particular malady has even impacted my own family in a certain way.
Right.
And
many families.
Many families, but it's personal for me now, too.
Right.
And tell me a little bit about how that kickoff event went down at the Confluence.
Yeah, it was an amazing evening. Just to give everyone a little bit of backstory, a little bit of history, we connected with Bridget back in May,
mm-hmm.
and very quickly, you know, she reached out to us. Her son, Devin, died of fentanyl poisoning in April of 2020, and Bridget has been working for the last year and a half to try and raise awareness for people in Hastings, and even at the national level. She has worked with some national groups on this issue. And it turns out that, as you pointed out, this is an epidemic. The latest statistics from the Center for Disease Control indicate that over 93,000 Americans died of overdoses and fentanyl poisoning in 2020. And that was a 30% increase over 2019, which was already an increase from the year prior to that. In Minnesota, we had over, I believe the latest number is 1,033 deaths.
Wow.
And in Dakota County, we had 56.
That's not good.
That's One is too many.
One is like 14 too many.
So I've been doing a lot of research on this and was reading an article kind of helping put this in context. And when the crack epidemic was raging, which was also terrible, there were approximately 9,000 deaths in 1 year that people were very upset about, rightly so.
Mm-hmm.
To have 90,000 is astonishing. And this is something that, as you said, is impacting literally every community in America, large and small. This is not an urban issue. This is an issue that affects rural, small town, suburbs.
Yep.
Many of these, part of the challenge is that it becomes a fairly complex topic in terms of the substances that are involved. We do refer to opioids because
it's a general
term. There are legal opioids, which are pain relievers, extremely powerful pain relievers,
and
which
extremely
should be used.
Controlled.
Yes, and they are a controlled substance. And there's been a lot of pressure put on the medical side to, you know, make sure that the right amount is being prescribed.
Mm-hmm.
There is also the flips, so that can be taken legally and with a prescription, but then those pills can make their way onto the street, and they can be used by people that have not had them prescribed to them, which is very risky. And then you have the illegal opioids, including fentanyl, which is, you know, in that setting become something that is used by not only drug users, addicts, people that use drugs regularly, street drugs, but also people that think that they're purchasing other types of street drugs and then overdose because the pill. In Devin's case, he thought he was buying Percocet, we understand, and that was not and Bridget would tell you that was not, she wished her son had not done that.
Sure.
But he didn't receive Percocet, he received fentanyl.
Ooh.
And the pill, Bridget has shared with us and with many members of the community, the pill that was the size of an aspirin approximately had enough fentanyl in it to kill 10 adults.
Yep.
It is extremely deadly. There's yep. another substance called carfentanil, which will kill you in even smaller amounts. And so this is being laced into all types of street drugs. And so when it's not just young people, when adults,
of course, but
and young adults and teens purchase street drugs, there is an excellent chance that one or more of them will contain a lethal amount of fentanyl.
Some of the people that I've talked to that research this kind of thing and study that industry, illegal as it is, are saying that these drugs are making their way into the supply in order to make people habitual users quicker.
We've heard that.
It was one of the reasons that it's in there.
Right.
And there is no quality control. The manufacturers are saying, just going to put some in there. I don't care how much.
Right.
We want to get these people hooked so they come back and get more.
We have read that.
And it winds up being more fatal than anybody had even anticipated, and it's really, really tough.
It's very scary, and I think Bridget is, you know, we've just been amazed. Our friendship with her now, and our working relationship, because we have worked together all, the two of us at the United Way, and Bridget have worked together to raise awareness, which is what the event Monday night was all about. It was to recognize International Overdose Awareness Day.
Right.
We had it on the 30th, because the 31st is the actual day itself. We collaborated with Mayor Mary and with Confluence Development. Confluence was kind enough, they're the developers of the Hudson, the former Hudson manufacturing building, and now the new The Confluence facility. And the parking deck across the street was where we held the event. And Confluence was able to, the brand new, newly restored cupolas, they are able to light those up, and they lit them purple.
Yep.
And so we had our event prior to that. And then Mayor Mary was so supportive and was able to arrange purple lights at City Hall. And so this week when you drive by City Hall in the evening or at night and you're wondering what the purple lights are, it is in recognition of IOAD. Bridget was also able to work with the governor's office and received a proclamation. She received a proclamation from Mayor Mary in recognition here in Hastings, but there was also a proclamation issued at the state level from the governor recognizing Overdose Awareness Day in the state, and the I-35 bridge was lit up in purple in recognition. So this was
and there will be a lot of things to be involved in. The overdose awareness is actually through the whole month now.
Yes.
They're going to have a program there. And I have to cut this conversation short. We're out of time. There's so much more that we could talk about. Really quickly, I'd like to say that if you have a problem or if you know of someone that has a problem with opioids, UnitedWayOfHastings.org is a good way to start.
Yes. Also call 211 for any landline or mobile phone.
And Bridget Noring's group, People Against These Drugs, the website is, they've changed it, but if you look up APALD on Facebook, you'll get to their page and their website. I would like to thank my guest for this half hour, Jay Newmiller-Bustad, for coming in. I appreciate your time. This is Community In-Depth on KDWA, AM 1460, FM 97.7.